Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 572. Science Faction, thorium reactors are finally here.
Don't distract us. We're about to go back into lockdown, Bobby. I just listened to your COVID episode. I listened to an episode of Skeptics Guide, and they were talking about thorium reactors in like 2015. Like, Stephen Novella was like, this is going to be the year it finally breaks out.
Well, first of all, stop listening to Skeptics Guide of any year. I don't know why you're screwing up our numbers by going back and listening to their old episodes. You know Stephen Novella and I are blood enemies, and the fact that you are patronizing their establishment is kind of offensive.
I was trying to find weaknesses, and one of his weaknesses is shittily predicting when thorium reactors were going to be big, because his big statement in 2015 was that this was the year thorium reactors are going to be big. Guess what? You're beating him to the punch.
By the way, I've also found out his second weakness, which is bullets. So I'm exploiting both of those.
Oh, I thought you were going to say groin strikes, because I'm willing to bet groin strikes is also on
the
list.
Yeah, you got to get closer for those.
Beanbag rounds to the groin, Bobby, like, or get hiring a John Elway to throw a Nerf Vortex football from 100 yards away.
And speaking of the John Elway of this show, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, as the Ryan Leaf of this podcast, how would you have handled Stephen Novella?
Oh, I would have broken into his house and stolen all the Vicodin from his medicine cabinet. I think that's how I would have handled it as Ryan Leaf.
I love that we input jokes onto a science show that we know like 0.2% of our audience are going to get.
Oh, that's fine. Hey, do you want to talk about MMA?
Well, if you want to talk about the people delivering knockouts to misinformation, well then how about our patrons, Damian? Our patreons have been supporting us, and I've forgotten, we've gotten a little bit behind on some of our Patreon shout outs, so I want to catch up on some of those. We have a new Patreon, Carrie H.
You are the goddamn Dustin Poirier of this. You're breaking the legs of science, anti-science heels like Conor McGregor and Alex Jones. Thank you. You know what? Maybe next person I'll make a more of a nerd reference. Okay, I'm done with MMA references.
Fair enough.
Next one.
Jordan Winnie. By the way, like our fourth Jordan, something about our show attracts Jordans as Patreons.
Jordan Winnie, you are the Gordy LaForge of this.
Are you trying to say Jordy LaForge? Because you've just offended me now.
I'm sorry, I'm British. I don't know if you know, but I... Gordy LaForge.
I don't think that's how they pronounce it either.
Well, we're going to need a British citizen to fucking tell me I'm wrong until that happens.
I feel like if the British did it that way, then Sir Patrick Stewart would have done it that way.
He was playing a French character. That couldn't you tell by his accent? Card Jean-Luc.
Oh, goddamn. And lastly, Taco. It's like taco salad, but the A is a four. I'm just going to guess it's taco salad. So we'll just say taco salad.
Taco salad, you are the Captain America of this Avengers team. You and your contributions and your well wishes and your initiative to step up and do what needs to be done to support dick jokes in science. In fact, I'm going to say that Steve Rogers is the poor man's Captain America. You are the Captain America. Taco. When I think Captain America, yeah. I think taco.
You know, as many of our fans know, frequently, as been has scientifically shown by researchers, chili can cause memory loss. What they don't know is that taco salad can cause love of science.
I hear it also causes growth in the genitals. Like, this is Alex Jones here. Yeah, like, you know, when I have a taco salad, you know, like, yeah, you know, like, I'm like, I think, like, hey, I just, like, Viagra myself.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Isn't it so cool that this podcast can have Alex Jones whenever it wants?
I feel like every podcast could have Alex Jones whenever it wants. Like, if you just put up a sign that says, like, let's wrestle shirtless over beer and ideas. Like, I feel like Alex Jones will show up.
But you don't want the real Alex Jones to show up. He's like a boogeyman that ruins podcasts.
If you say Alex Jones into a mic three times, then all of a sudden all the frogs around you are gay?
Shut up, Bobby. Shut up. We've said it twice. Shut the fuck up.
I have a valuable frog breeding business that I am not going to put in jeopardy. Oh, dear. All right. Article number one. Thorium reactors are finally here. Well, in China here.
So, Steven Novella won. That's what I hear.
That man will never win.
Not in your ground game, because I know you've been taking jiu-jitsu.
That's
Our
right.
fans might know that Bobby is quite the studious white belt.
Yes, and I literally, every time I go in there, I just imagine Novella's face on every other one of those guys, and I just strangle him.
Yeah, I'm going to ignore it when he taps. I'm going to ignore it when Novella taps. I'm going to snap his goddamn arm.
Oh, dear. So this is really, really great news, and here is why. First, the news itself, which is that the first thorium reactors will supposedly be producing power as early as this September. We have some experimental reactors that we have used and turned on, and we're not quite sure if we're able to really produce power on a commercial scale. Apparently, China thinks they can and has it built and will start this September, which is huge. So let's talk about why this is huge. Theoretically, if we could figure out nuclear power, whether that's fusion or fission, to such a degree that it was safe and plentiful and able to be all around the world, well, then we would no longer have a climate change problem. And I want to say that in more ways than one. Some people might be saying, okay, well, we would be making a bunch of electricity. We wouldn't need to use gas or coal, so we wouldn't be producing more carbon, so we could stop climate change. And my answer is no. This actually goes further than that. If you have essentially unlimited power, you have the ability to not just stop climate change, but use carbon capture technology, which takes energy. We could do this now. We have the machinery to do this now. It's just, it would be illogical because it takes energy to put into these devices, but we have devices that can literally pull carbon out of the air and sequester that, whether it's sometimes deep below the ground in, you know, certain forms of limestone or something that we can pump it down into there.
Under your basement. Under your bed, like it's pornography and you're a kid. Just, hey, I need to like pack this carbon away.
Yeah, so sometimes, I actually read a story once about like a really fucked up Austrian dude who actually captured his own carbon and kept it in a basement sequestered for like 20 years and just like sexually assaulted it.
In a just world, he'd be a hero. However, the case you're basing this off of, that man was a monster.
Damien? A hero? I'm saving that clip.
No. The man who sequestered carbon was a hero. I don't care that he sexually assaulted it. I don't.
So theoretically, if we had the type of power that, specifically fusion, but also actually enough fission reactors, if we had that ability, we could not only stop the worsening climate change issues with greenhouse gases, we could actually reverse the damage that has already been done using powered carbon capture technology.
By the way, I just saw HBO's Chernobyl, and I really like the scene where the guy was trying to sexually abuse nuclear power. It was a dark series, but it was a funny scene.
Yeah.
In that series. Like, his dick developed blisters. He did climax, though, before he collapsed.
Well, that's all that's
and
important.
That shows Russian perseverance.
That story, like most fairy tales, has a happy ending.
Duh.
So let's talk about this. What are the dangers? What are the problems? Why do we kind of have a weird feeling when we talk about nuclear power? Well, anybody who was around the past 10 years probably remembers an event called Fukushima. Damien just mentioned another event, Chernobyl. There's also Three Mile Island in New York. And those are just kind of like big public incidents, right? So we have had problems with nuclear reactors before. They have what we call melted down. Now, the meltdown is not an explosion, usually in the same way that we would think of a nuclear explosion, because a reactor actually can't produce a nuclear explosion. And I could get into the physics of that, but it's actually fairly complicated. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, but let's just say, take my word on it. You can Google it later. A standard fission nuclear reactor can actually produce a nuclear explosion, but it can produce an explosion. In fact, I believe this happened in Chernobyl. A couple other cases is it will explode with about the same strength as TNT, so a decent-sized explosion. Nothing that's going to take out a city, though. and then it can spread irradiated materials or gases around the world. This has to do with the way we built nuclear reactors. And I say the word built because we haven't built new ones since the 70s, and the ones like Fukushima were based on designs from like the 50s and 60s. Like, we are really, it's kind of like when we talked about, you know, the fastest plane that was ever built was built in 1967, and that's the SR-71 Blackbird, and like, we haven't built something faster, and you're like, wait a second, it's 50 some odd years, aren't we way beyond them technologically? And yeah, we are, but we just haven't done it. Well, the same thing is true with nuclear power. Now, those old style reactors have the ability to melt down, and that makes them dangerous. They also have to be positioned near sources of water, usually seawater, in order to do their cooling and their steaming and everything like that. And because of that, that leads to an issue like Fukushima, where you have an explosion and then all of a sudden you have nuclear materials leaking out into the sea that can go around the entire world, right?
Creating Godzillas. Yeah. All over the place.
It's not just your thing anymore, Japan. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, now we have American kaijus, which is basically just like an anthropomorphized monster truck that's just running amok in Tennessee.
I was going to say, I think the American kaiju is an F-350. Like, I think that's actually what it is.
It runs over Godzilla like it's somehow like, oh no, oh no. 350 Saiyan has been irradiated and he's gonna go run over that Godzilla. You know, my grandfather fought in World War II, so I'm okay with this.
And that is a very big concern, but the flip side is, hey, you know what we're doing every time we're not building a new nuclear plant is we are using coal, we are using gas. In some cases, and for instance, here in Southern California, we're very proud of the fact that we have a huge renewable energy environment, but that is not everywhere. And so
I actually was an archaeologist on a lot of the wind farms that actually supply this podcast you're listening to right now. So,
wow,
like,
were that on federal land or state land, Damien?
Both. Actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm. As the expert, you're going to have to trust me on this.
Oh, interesting. So then you must be familiar with both NEPA and CEQA.
Yes. And I am also familiar with eating ass, ladies.
Nice cover. All right.
Hey, not all some scientists fuck. Not you, but like some scientists fuck.
And by the way, nuclear meltdown isn't the only problem with nuclear reactors. There are many other problems, not least of which is nuclear waste, which stays irradiated for 10,000 plus years. And we basically don't have a storage facility here in the U.S. We just kind of store them ad hoc at the facilities in which they are used. Those could be used for dirty bombs. They could be used, depending on whether or not they're plutonium, for actual nuclear bombs. There's a lot of problems that go on with just the spent fuel rods, essentially the waste from those nuclear reactors.
In a free market, you should be allowed to sell your spent waste, your spent nuclear waste. I mean, why should we have to bury it responsibly when we can use it to make a profit? Yeah, if Al-Qaeda wants it, they should be allowed to have it.
That is the free market. But wait, there's more when it comes to damage, because when we are using nuclear reactors, we're using uranium, usually 235, and that is a small percentage of overall uranium. So we have to mine a shit ton of uranium, which is already a very rare metal. We have to mine a shit ton of it just to get enough of the 235. 235 only makes up a tiny percentage of the overall uranium that we mine. And so it's incredibly intensive if you want to look at both the greenhouse gases, the environmental costs, and the effort that goes into just mining the uranium and purifying it to get it to that nuclear reactor. So nuclear reactors on the surface, good idea. You can create a lot of electricity and, you know, cut way down on greenhouse gases, which are absolutely a problem, but they have a lot of issues with them. And almost every one of those issues goes away when you stop using uranium-235 and start using thorium.
What's the life expectancy of a uranium miner?
Well, I guess that would depend where you are. Like, the hills in Denver have a lot of uranium. I'm sure there's a company that mines them there, and they have to follow OSHA guidelines. But there's, like, also some in Gabon, Africa. And I feel like those guys, shorter lifespan.
It's like firefighters in the Chernobyl plant carrying out, like, fucking graphite.
Yes, versus, like, firefighters who work at Anaheim and occasionally have to clean up a lot of vomit at Disneyland.
Whoa, hold on. There was a broken leg at a youth soccer game earlier this morning. I feel like you're totally devaluing my profession, bro.
I mean, the EMTs were there and taking care of it, but we blocked traffic.
It was a summer day. We also hooked up our hose so kids could cool down.
As a matter of fact, that's actually how that kid broke his leg. We squirted him pretty good.
Yeah, he was actually
ass
about
over tea cuddle right into the side of a Chevy Tahoe, man. That kid just snapped his leg like crazy. Good thing those EMTs were there because we were laughing way too hard to help.
They wouldn't return our high fives. And that kid was also about to score the game-winning goal that would have taken the team to state.
So thorium reactors are a totally different beast. Now, it's not like thorium reactors, the idea of which just like got invented. We were actually thinking of these in the 40s and 50s and trying to build them. We just ran into some problems. It's also, by the way, I should comment, not like you can just take thorium and put it in a standard uranium reactor and have it work. We have to build whole new systems for this. But let's go over this. Now, the first thing to understand is how a typical uranium nuclear power plant works. So it's pretty simple. You take that uranium-235 and you put them, basically jam all this uranium into what we call fuel rods that are then inside the reactor itself. Those fuel rods, because of the nature of uranium-235, are constantly sending out neutrons. Basically, it is decaying from uranium-235, which is unstable, to other forms. And as it's doing that, it's sending off neutrons.
Neutrons.
If a neutron hits another element of uranium-235, it causes it to go off as well. This is what we see in a controlled nuclear explosion, is basically a neutron cascade, and all the neutrons are hitting all of the atoms of the, in the case of a bomb, plutonium or uranium that you're using, and explode all of those and release all of their energy really, really fast. Well, a nuclear reactor is the same, similar idea, but you're basically using the reaction very, very slowly. So in this case, you take those fuel rods and you dip them in water. The water acts both to cool them down and as a neutron moderator, meaning it bounces back some of those neutrons that are coming out back into the fuel rods. That makes more uranium-235 react and put out more neutrons. With those neutrons also comes heat. So those fuel rods heat up. And what happens when those fuel rods heat up? They boil that water that's surrounding it. That boiled water gets to go up and be used as steam, and that steam is what powers what we're doing. So basically, any nuclear reactor is just a big steam turbine hooked up to some fancy little metals, right? And that is a basis. Now, there's a lot of different types. There's different ways to do that and to manage it, but because you need the water both to constantly go in through that steam cycle, and by the way, that water going through the steam cycle is separated from the fuel rods itself through like a heat transfer, so it's not like that water going out is irradiated. Steam goes through and you constantly need more water to come in to cool down the fuel rods, and then it goes out usually as steam, and that's why they are usually near the coast, so they can constantly have an inlet of water getting to them. And then you have things that happen, like for instance Fukushima, where basically the diesel generators that usually pump all that water in, they broke down. The water couldn't come in to cool anything down. The fuel rods were too hot, and they literally burned through the concrete bottom of the actual thing. I think there's also a minor explosion there as well. So that's what happens in a meltdown. Basically, there's an out-of-control reaction. The reaction keeps going because there's enough neutrons to sustain itself, and the thing melts down. It literally burns through the container that it's in, usually because there's a shortage of whatever is moderating the temperature, usually water. In the case of Chernobyl, there might have been something else where basically there was an explosion. But that's what can happen. Now, thorium reactors work a little differently. Instead of using fuel rods, molten salt reactors work by dissolving the thorium. So you take that metal thorium, you dissolve it into a big vat of liquid fluoride salt, and then you put it in the reactor chamber at temperatures of above 1,000 degrees. And with all that energy, that high heat...
And just like topless dudes with shovels, just like... continually throwing
such heat.
This is what I like. It makes your nuclear reactor more like a steampunky.
Yeah.
You know, like you have like, in you go, governor, throwing in more thorium, there you go. Gonna be powering me wasp vibrator.
And then when high-energy neutrons hit the thorium atoms, they split and they release energy and more neutrons, just like what was going on in a standard uranium model, and that keeps the chain reaction going. That heats up the thorium salt mixture, which then goes on to a secondary chamber within the reactor where the excess energy is extracted, basically probably similar with a steam turbine and made into electricity. Now, the reason that's really different and interesting is a few. First, remember when we talked about accessing the uranium just to get the uranium to the plant? Well, in thorium models, thorium is way more abundant than uranium naturally. And guess what?
This planet is lousy with thorium.
It is. And unlike the uranium, which is like 1% to 2% of it is uranium-235 that we can use in these reactors, basically all of the thorium that we find we can use. So there's more of it, and a giant percentage is useful. It would be an incredibly cheap and easy to get fuel. It would take the process of getting the thorium for the reaction and make it essentially a non-issue. Whereas right now with uranium, it's a pretty big fucking deal. In fact, there's uranium brokers and dealers, and it's a big deal to try and get uranium because of the weapons potential and everything else that happens later. Another thing is the result, which is the spent fuel at the end. Remember we talked before about how in uranium, the issues are, one, it just has to sit around. It's irradiated for 10,000 years. But number two is it can actually be turned into a bomb. It can be turned into a dirty bomb where you just blow up radioactive material and spread it around, or it can be turned into an actual nuclear bomb, especially the plutonium. In fact, many countries that now have nuclear weapons didn't start out having nuclear weapons. They started out getting nuclear material from a regularly built nuclear reactor. They literally pulled it out and that's where they got it. So that's another problem is, you know, nuclear reactors are basically just kind of bomb material making factories.
They're gateway drugs. It is a gateway drug into bombing. Like, hey, listen, mom, I'm just building a nuclear reactor to power my fucking country's industry.
Yeah. And the radioactive remains of thorium last less than 500. The half-life is like 500 years. So they do not last very long at all. There's not nearly as much of them. And you can't turn it into a nuclear bomb. That's awesome.
No matter how hard we keep trying. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. So those two things are absolutely amazing. But so is this. Thorium reactors cannot melt down. That's because, unlike the uranium reactors, where when they get hot enough, they're constantly shooting off neutrons, and then the water goes away, and now you have nothing to cool them, and they melt through their exterior because they just keep getting hotter and hotter. Thorium is the opposite, which means that its default position isn't an out-of-control reaction. Its default position is to turn itself off. Basically, if you had an instance like Fukushima where power was cut to the facility, instead of having those diesel generators not being able to pump water into the thing, if you had that equivalent on a thorium reactor, the entire system would just shut down.
That's right. If us thorium shovelers don't get what we want in negotiation, this entire town shuts down without threat of nuclear extermination. We want to be able to wear shirts during our shift.
So you don't need to spend a lot of money to get fuel. You don't need to worry about what happens to that fuel after you use it, at least not for that long after you use it. You don't need to worry about meltdowns when it happens. And even better, you don't need a water source to cool it in the first place, which means you don't need to have it near the sea where if something bad did happen, it irradiates the ocean. Also, these can be made very small. If you think of a nuclear reactor, if you've ever seen one, we have a big decommissioned one near us called San Onofre. It is gigantic. It's like the size of many football fields. These small thorium reactors are thought to be able to be as small as, for instance, a water heater in a house to power things like apartment buildings. And that would be very, very interesting. Without the need for water to cool it down, with the ability to make it very small, you could theoretically have these neighborhood-sized generation facilities almost everywhere and constantly produce electricity with no greenhouse gas emissions, and that would make a really big difference. Even if we couldn't do that in residential areas now, residential areas actually don't use up nearly as much electricity as we think they do. So much electricity is currently used by industry that it would be really easy to retrofit certain industries. So I'm thinking like the ones that use a lot of energy, things like cement production and things like that. You could retrofit those industries to incorporate small thorium reactors and boom, take those guys off the grid. This is really interesting technology. Now, we tried to build some of these in the 40s and 50s, but it's hard to get a sustained reaction out of thorium. That's the reason it's so safe. The reaction won't sustain itself, so it can't melt down. That also makes it more difficult to work with. And scientists in the 40s and 50s really had a bigger is better attitude. And they're like, hey, look at this pussy shit. Let's go with the good stuff. You know, let's get the stuff that goes boom.
What's cancer?
Exactly. And also, there was some technical issues involving the salt kind of like rusting and melting away at the reactors and stuff. It's all stuff that we've kind of fixed to some extent with modern materials, though we're not 100% sure how the Chinese actually pulled the whole thing off, or if they did, if it's just a political stunt. But China is now saying it is unveiling something like 30 of these reactors in the next couple years, all along their desert region, so they don't need to have water to produce it, and they could essentially build entire towns out of this. Remember, once you have almost unlimited energy someplace, you have everything. You have water, you have air, you have fuel, you have everything, because water is just a pump away. Every place on Earth has water,
if you go deep enough. The problem is the electricity and power it takes to pump that water and the aquifers involved and stuff. But if you are just have a bunch of nuclear reactors that are constantly producing essentially unlimited free energy, you can make cities out of the desert real easy. Look at Vegas. Like, all the AC, all the everything, it's just run by the Hoover Dam and all the power that they can produce out there, right?
You just gave like a Tony Montana speech, like about like, first in China, first you get the thorium reactor, then you get the power. Then you get the women.
Very, very cool things. And if China is right on this, and by the way, this is backed by groups like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, things like that. If they are right, then hopefully this is coming to the United States soon. Because as much as you may have apprehension about nuclear fears, and those are not unwarranted, I want to emphasize those are valid fears. Those fears do not translate over to thorium. And what thorium reactors could do is take us off the teat of gasoline, natural gas, and coal, all of which are fucking us up in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. And if we could do that, if we could produce that, it would be cheaper, it would be easier. Think about it. Think if you were a power company, you'd want a bunch of thorium reactors because coal is fucking expensive. It's expensive to mine. People die doing it. It's expensive to maintain the things. You know, Damien joked earlier, I actually have been the lead archaeologist on numerous alternative energy projects. And
whoa, are you stealing archaeological valor? Yeah. Right now, Bobby?
Let me see your trowel. Where's your trowel?
It's in the shop.
Yeah, okay.
It's had a bent fender.
What brand is that trowel?
Oh, it's a Toyota.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So all archaeologists use one brand of trowel, and it's called Marshalltown. Boom.
I got mine from an old native. It was the trowel his grandfather used, and I got that only after years of earning the trust of the Kumeyaay people.
Those companies that put up those big wind farms, those big solar farms, it's not like those are alternative energy companies. Those are just energy companies. They have gasoline plants, they have coal plants, this was profitable. And when you talk to them, they go, of course this is profitable. Look at wind, look at solar. We don't have to pay somebody to mine coal. We don't have to pay a bunch of dudes to run a coal factory. We don't have to pay to have those coal machines constantly serviced, because they do need to be constantly serviced.
We don't have to pay dudes to shovel thorium. And their powerful thorium shoveling union?
Yeah, well, instead he's like, well, we have these big windmills up there. Once we put, yeah, it's expensive to put them up. Once we put them up, we have a crew of 11 guys who run this entire thing. The equivalent power from a coal power plant would take us like 250 dudes. There's the equivalent maintenance is like 1/100th the cost, because you're not having combustion and hot things and everything. It's just a wind turbine spinning over and over again. And so it's really profitable. Well, the same thing would be true with thorium reactors. If these really worked and they were safe and everything like that, we could start replacing coal plants. We could start replacing all these other plants. Just wipe them clean. Slap a little thorium guy in there, and then every once in a while, a truck shows up. Again, with nuclear reactors, you have to refuel them every, like, 10 years. So, like, every once in a while, a truck shows up with some thorium, fills that bad boy up, and then just moves on. We could do that. That is a reality. And we don't have the political will because of kind of all the bad sides of nuclear. But once we get rid of those bad sides,
and how powerful oil is in our government.
But again, this is what I'm saying, is those companies, they want to make money, and they will make more money with thorium reactors than they will with a coal power plant. And for the same reason that those exact same companies are the ones who build wind farms and solar farms, they will put up thorium reactors if it's cheaper.
Again, having to deal with that powerful thorium shoveler union, it's almost not worth it.
All right, on to article number 2. New research suggests heavy weed use increases likelihood of schizophrenia.
Oh, okay, but it doesn't cause impotence. Because then what's causing my impotence?
Because I fuck a lot of schizophrenic dudes. And, like, if it turns out...
And I can't come when I fuck them. I'm not taking the meds.
Dear. So, what have we been told previously about weed and schizophrenia? We've talked about this a little bit. There is a correlation between onset of schizophrenic symptoms and cannabis use, meaning we have seen a lot of people who, in the midst of smoking weed, have a schizophrenic episode and are then schizophrenic, basically. Like, it's like a switch gets flipped. Now, there's always been this back and forth argument. Does that mean that weed is causing them to get schizophrenia? Or is it that these people would have gotten schizophrenia? They would have gotten it, you know, 2 years down the line, whatever. They smoke some weed and that sped it up. That's kind of the debate. There is no debate that these cases happen. We've seen them happen. This has been in the literature since the 70s.
I've seen Reefer Madness, Bobby. I know what happens when you smoke a doob.
But the question is, you know, is this bringing on a situation that wouldn't otherwise have been brought on, or is it just bringing it on sooner? So there are some indications of rising levels of schizophrenia. And those seem to be associated with increased cannabis use in the population. But it's not a solid link because these are big trends. Like, increase in cannabis use in the population is a big trend that has happened, for instance, in the United States over the past 30 years. And, you know, that's hard to unmarry from other things that might be going on that might cause higher levels of schizophrenia.
Maybe people who smoke are more likely to be diagnosed as well.
Yes.
Like either...
Absolutely. I mean, that's true. So in a big Danish nationwide study, they looked at the population attributable risk fraction for cannabis use disorder and schizophrenia, which is basically what is the group that we think came down with schizophrenia that wouldn't otherwise have schizophrenia because of overuse of cannabis. It should be noted that, by the way, they are talking about cannabis use disorder, which is not I smoked weed. Cannabis use disorder is pretty much I wake and bake and I don't stop till I sleep and drink. I don't know. What is the opposite?
I don't stop till I sleep with my penis limp in my hand because I, again, am impotent.
Cannabis use disorder is not, I have a few joints every week or something like this. Cannabis use disorder is extensive use and usually unstoppable use of cannabis that happens regularly throughout
like
the day.
Like the Kool-Aid man of cannabis use. Like it'll just smash through your wall. Like, time to wake and bake, motherfucker.
You were right at first. It was the Kool-Aid man. That dude has a problem. Why do you think he's busting through walls all the time? Like, that's inappropriate, man.
Listen, that wasn't red Kool-Aid. Those are red eyes you're seeing. That's just water. Like they have yet to put in the mix.
They believe that number, which is kind of like the amount of schizophrenia that is extra in the population, so to speak, seemed to increase from about 2% in the period up to about 1995 to approximately 6-8% since 2010. So, basically, 2% of schizophrenia was associated with cannabis use disorder in 95, and since 2010, that number's gone up to 8%. That's pretty substantial. So, what does the study look at, and how does they come to that conclusion?
It was that they looked at people who, like, after they, like, took a dab for the first time, or hit a bong for the first time, and, like, watched how they freaked out.
Well, yeah. And so, I mean, they are basically saying that the proportion of schizophrenia associated with cannabis use disorder is 3 to 4 times what it was just, you know, a couple decades ago. And that's a huge claim. Now, the question is this a valid measure? Well, it's not airtight. And there's a few reasons for that. One is, you know, we're not sure how many people with quote unquote cannabis use disorder have that because they're schizophrenic, as Damien was mentioning before. So like, for instance, if we said a bunch of these people are using a ton of cannabis, well, maybe they were schizophrenic and they were using a bunch of cannabis. And so now we are going to say they also have cannabis use disorder. And we have blamed one on the other where maybe the schizophrenia caused cannabis use disorder. Another is to look at, you know, the overall numbers and say, well, maybe schizophrenia is increasing because our diagnostic treatments are different. So much like we, you know, it looks like ADD is much more prevalent than it was before, where in fact we're just diagnosing it more than before. It also could be that schizophrenia and cannabis use are both going up in general in the population for totally unrelated reasons. So for instance, schizophrenia, at least some portion of it, is a genetic condition. We know that you have higher likelihoods of certain genetic conditions, and schizophrenia does appear to be one of them, with older parents. So maybe as more parents tend to have kids in older and older years, as they hold off having kids for professional reasons and stuff, as we seem to see, then maybe you're going to have more instances of schizophrenia in the population. And it just so happens that cannabis use is also increasing in the population during that time. Those are all possibilities. We're not 100% sure. However, I would say this is something we should consider. Cannabis is a powerful mind-altering drug, and we know for sure, we know as a matter of fact, that some people have had schizophrenia essentially brought out of them by use of cannabis, meaning that there is some kind of link there. Even if all it did was bring it out a year earlier, or 2 months earlier or something, there is some kind of link there. And anytime we look at something like that, we have to remember there's no such thing as a free lunch. Like, you know, just like, you know, drinking is going to affect your brain, everything that is that powerful will have an effect on your brain. And I use the example that I always like to use. I think like super benign drugs, a lot of the hallucinogenics have constantly been rated by numerous organizations as essentially the safest drugs, like psilocybin, psilocin, LSD. They're constantly talked about as, you know,
salt.
Well, they're constantly mentioned as like these drugs, in every study we've covered, these drugs seem to be the least dangerous to users, right? Which I buy. I agree with that research, everything. However, if you ever watch the TV show Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia from Vice, you will see a guy who goes around and, like, uses exotic weird hallucinogens and talks to people who've used exotic weird hallucinogens. And just watch a few episodes of Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia where he goes talks to some old, like, LSD or mushroom users, and you will realize that that shit can fuck up your brain. There is absolutely no doubt about it. Go watch it when he goes and talks to some guy who's been doing LSD since the 70s, and you will see that that dude's brain is royally fucked up. So, like, even the ones that are rated as the safest, the drugs that are told to be the absolute safest you can use, still, on a long enough timeline, will have consequences, and there are things that you should be aware of. And, so, like, in leaving this, should we make it illegal? Fuck no. We tried that for a long time, and it didn't work. And also, you know, who's to say the good doesn't balance out the bad? Maybe the lowered stress and the recreation and the lack of inhibition, all that stuff, maybe that outweighs some of the bad stuff. But what we should also say is, let's be aware that it's a super powerful drug and that it can cause problems. And there is no free lunch. And just because it's not going to kill you, again, you know, the LDD-50 dose is way, way too high to kill you. Just because it doesn't kill you doesn't mean that it can't also fuck you up permanently, maybe even cause these type of disorders. Or if somebody's genetic, let's say there's the genetic markers are there, so they're on the borderline, and they might be schizophrenic, and they might not be. Maybe this pushes some people over that border. So maybe there's some guy who can sit there. In fact, I'm almost certain you can say this. There are guys who can sit there and smoke weed all day, all night, and never get schizophrenia. I know, because I went to school with some of them. However,
have you kept up with them? I mean, like, maybe they're freaking out now.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they think you never left.
But there are certainly people who genetically are predisposed to it, and maybe they wouldn't have gotten schizophrenia otherwise. Maybe they would have lived a normal life, but that, boom, it switched something in their brain that then made them schizophrenic from then on. We don't know, but we should consider this for a few reasons. One, schizophrenia, look at the onset times for males, early 20s, females, mid to late 20s. So if you are in or before that time period, it should be much more of a risky proposition than if you're far beyond it, where you're unlikely to develop schizophrenia. Number two, family history should be considered. And number three, the amount you use should be considered, especially if you're within either a family history danger zone or an age danger zone where you might be flirting with schizophrenia, then the amount you use should be considered. Because again, this did not say people who smoked weed. These are Danish people. They probably all smoked weed. It just looked at people with cannabis use disorder. You looked at people who smoked way too much. So that is something we should be aware of. Even quote-unquote safe drugs do have unsafe limits, and we should be aware of those when we use or promote them.
Now, you see, Bobby, I say this as a heavy pot smoker,
mm-hmm.
and I also say this as somebody who, with a family history of his family being lame.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I don't see the problem, big guy. Like, you didn't have an uncle blowing bong smoke in your face, bro? Like, dude, square.
To be fair, part of the reason you don't see the problem is you have already forgotten what we were talking about.
We were talking about goldfish, I think, right?
Nuclear reactors.
Oh, my God. Thor. Ragnarok. Listen, if this podcast turned one person off drugs, I'll leave. I will take my podcasting bindle. I'll give you my badge and gun,
yeah.
And I will leave this show.
And that bindle is just filled with drugs, so.
No, don't take my, you know what? I'm taking my bindle.
Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 572, where you learned all about thorium reactors and whether or not weed causes schizophrenia. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 573.
So anybody want to buy Vicodin from a Bendel?
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.